Plus 49.
Bienvenidos to a brand new episode of Plus 49. I am Sigrid Arteaga, and I'm thrilled to have you with us today. We've got a packed show for you today and a lot of Spargel. First up, a look at what's making headlines, from shifts in German citizenship research to Berlin's back and forth on speed limits. Then we dive into a cultural mystery. Why are Germans so obsessed with white asparagus? And later, a conversation with two institutions, Maurice and Andrew, about life in Germany, humor, and yes, why the fax machine refuses to die in Germany. Let's get into it. It is time to dive into this week's news and take a look at what's making headlines here in Berlin and across Germany. We start with a major development. The SPD has given its official green light to the coalition agreement with CDU and CSU. With over 84% of voting members in favor, the path is now clear for signing the deal on Monday. SPD leader Lars Klingelbeil is set to become vice chancellor, and Boris Pistorius will likely remain defense minister. The party's full list of cabinet nominees is expected ahead of Tuesday's parliament vote, with CDU leader Friedrich Merz is to be elected chancellor and his government sworn in. Next, here in Berlin, CDU politician Dirk Stettner has confirmed that a 50-kilometer speed limit will return to the city's main roads later this year. The move reverses a key policy from the previous left-led Senate, which lowers speeds to reduce noise and emissions. While the 30-kilometer-per-hour limit will remain in place overnight and in sensitive areas like schools or care homes, environmental groups warn that the new changes compromise road safety and air quality. And in other news, the Dezim Institute is launching a new research project on how citizenship and ancestry shaped European identity. They're looking for participants across Germany with family roots in Central, Eastern, and Southeastern Europe who became citizens through descent. The one-on-one interviews will explore personal perspectives on belonging, citizenship, and intergenerational visions of Europe. Coming up next, Germans and their beloved Spargel. Why asparagus season is practically a national holiday. And later, our conversation with Andrew and Maurice. Stay tuned. We're at the beginning of May, and that means we're well into one of the most cherished seasons in Germany. Spargelzeit, or asparagus season. Just as apples mark the arrival of fall, nothing epitomizes spring quite like the white stalks of asparagus. Unlike the green variety more common in North America and the UK, Germans prefer the white kind, which is grown underground to prevent photosynthesis and harvest entirely by hand. It's delicate, slightly bitter, and celebrated with a reverence that borders on obsession. Germans have been giving this harvest season its own name, Spargelzeit, and they celebrate it with passion. Rich in nutrients and very low in calories, white asparagus have become a culinary status for many. In fact, Germans consume a staggering 125,000 tons of it each year, more than any other country in the EU, and still import extra to satisfy national cravings. Only Switzerland eats more per capita. But the seasonal speciality isn't just about taste, it's about tradition. Spargelzeit kicks off around mid-April and wraps up rather precisely on June 24th. Remember last week's farmer sayings? Well, here is one for asparagus. Kirsche rot, Spargel tot. Cherries red, asparagus dead. That means when the cherries are red, then the asparagus are not longer there. The idea here is to let the plants recover in time for the next year's crop. Until then, local flocked markets, roadside stands, and restaurants for classic Spargel dishes, typically served with potatoes, ham, melted butter, or the ever-popular Hollandaise sauce. And what's a German tradition without a healthy dose of regional pride? Well, depending on where you are, the local variety reigns supreme. In Bavaria, it's all about Schrubbenhäuser Spargel. In Baden-Württemberg, you will find Schwetzinger Spargel on the menu. In North Rhine-Westphalia, champions is Münsterländer Spargel, while Berlin and Brandenburg go all to the Belitz Spargel, grown just 30 minutes south of the capital. In fact, Belitz is officially known as Spargelstadt, the asparagus town. And what does every proper Spargelstadt need? That is right, a queen. Each year, Belitz crowns its own Spargelkönigin, or asparagus queen. But it's not just Belitz. Many regions across Germany elect their own Spargelkönigin to preside over parades, open festivals, and symbolically harvest the first spears. These queens are proud ambassadors of their region's white gold, promoting it with charm and flair. In Belitz, the queen is chosen annually by the Belitz Spargel e.V., a local association dedicated to keeping this tradition alive. Her duties include opening the season, attending the Spargelumzug, the asparagus parade in Berlin, and representing one of the most prized asparagus growing areas in the country. So, if you're new to Germany and wonder why asparagus is suddenly everywhere, from corner markers to multi-course menus, now you know. Here, asparagus isn't just a vegetable. It's a seasonal event, a cultural treasure, and yes, a crowning glory. I'm going to say it again. We're with two institutions of Germany, of Berlin. One of them is Maurice, and the other one is Andrew.
Why do I feel like you're saying we're old?
No. Maybe we're a little bit old, but in Berlin, who's actually old in Berlin?
I don't know. The other day I heard that it's easier to get into Berghain if you're over 50, so.
No, I totally believe that. I think that's true. Because I don't knock it in. And I always feel like he remembers me from back in the day. But then the other day I thought, no, he just sees your gray hair. And he's like, yeah, come on in, man.
Okay, so back in the days before you had gray hair.
It was actually called Ostgut. It wasn't even called Berghain back. It was in a different location. And yeah, before I had gray hair.
When did you arrive in Berlin?
2000 officially.
Officially. So before that, you had a long lost affair with Berlin?
Well, I lived in Frankfurt on Main for 2 years. And I was coming here once a month on work from 98.
And Berlin was exactly this amazing place everybody was talking about.
It was a lot fewer people. Yeah, it was. Yeah. Because half of Berlin was pretty much an unwritten book at that point. It was like a book that hadn't been updated in 40 years. And so you could update it. You could just add a couple pages.
So at the moment we're talking with Andrew. Andrew has been here over a couple more than 25 years. And we're also talking here with Maurice. And both of them have something called 20%. What is 20%?
20% Berlin is a newsletter that Andrew and I have been doing for 3.5 years. And it's also a podcast. We started a podcast about 6 months ago. And it's a newsletter in English for Berliners, basically, for anyone who can read English living in Berlin.
I think the idea is to give access to people who don't speak German access to local news. Like I kept meeting expats who didn't know like who the mayor was or why a certain building was being built. And I thought, yeah, it's because you can't read the newspapers. I thought that's our job. I was a journalist anyway. And I thought, we should give these people access.
I mean, what really happened was that Andrew and I were both working at Berliner Zeitung, where we did a sort of English edition for a couple of years, but it was in the middle of the pandemic. And we started writing these pandemic updates every day and built quite a fan base. And then unfortunately, they decided that they didn't need us and they laid us off. And the next day we started 20% Berlin on Substack. And it's just been, flourishing ever since.
We discovered we didn't need them either.
What you cannot see at the moment is both of them have a fan base, also because they're so good looking.
Whoa.
I'm really saying that. So take a look at 20% Berlin, where you can not only hear their podcast, but you can also see them on video. And
You can?
Yes, you can. No?
No, there's no video.
We don't have video podcast.
You can see Andrew on video. He's all over TikTok and Instagram. Oh. Because he's quite the TikTok star, actually. He's also a stand-up comedian, so he's much more used to the spotlight when it comes to video.
That is right, but you have a picture of both of you sitting on a couch. Maybe that was kind of the idea that I've got.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, you have a fan base, and now you've met a couple of more. We are back with 20% Berlin. And 20% Berlin comes, I guess, that almost 20% of the people in Berlin have foreign roots.
Actually, let me correct you on that a little bit. The name was Andrew's idea, and I think it's quite genius. It's actually 20% of people in Berlin who do not have a German passport.
Me included.
Right. And actually, that number has gone up to 24% in the last 3 years. So people keep asking, are you going to change your name? But it doesn't really make sense to change the name every time this number changes. So we're keeping it 20%. Maybe when we hit 30%, we'll change the name.
So we're going to stick on the 20% and the podcast. And Andrew is also social media influencer, TikToker, and stand-up comedian.
Yeah.
And you also try to explain to people what it's like to live in Germany.
I mean, that's what we were both journalists, and that's what you do the whole time as a journalist. Even if you're just talking about recent events, you're still trying to explain what happens in Germany. And then just on the side, I was always making little jokes about how weird Germany is. And then TikTok came and I made one video as a joke and it went viral. And then I thought, oh, maybe I can do this. So I've been doing that ever since. But I don't have 100,000 followers. But
you're humble bragging. Look, you are like, he's like constantly touring Germany doing comedy in English and German.
Yeah, but that's comedy. That's not because of Instagram. That's just comedy. Yeah.
Right.
Because speaking German is actually a comedy.
I guess I should make more jokes about the German language. I don't have any.
But Maurice is actually a German.
Yeah, I have a German passport. I have German parents. Today I was at the Bürgeramt getting a German passport for my 6-year-old son. And I think the officials there were a little bit confused because I was speaking English to them. My children don't really speak German very well.
So. But you're speaking German. You're speaking English to your children.
Yeah.
That's what I think you're speaking.
No, I wasn't speaking English to the Bürgeramt people.
Dude, that's something you would do. I could totally see you doing that.
Okay.
And one of the things is that you had to pay with an EC-karte and you didn't have one. It's because we're at the end in a place that where we can still use fax.
Yeah, I know. No, but it's wild because, you know, last month I got a pass for my other son at the Bürgeramt in Neukölln. And there you could pay with a credit card. But the Bürgeramt in Prenzlauer Berg didn't let me pay with a credit card. So then I had to go to a different Bürgeramt and put cash into a machine so that it was paid. It was all just a certain, I don't know, every little office has its own rules. And it's one of the strange things about Germany.
This must be the only country on the planet where it's difficult to give people money, where they make it difficult for you to give. Like, I thought it was just in Berlin that restaurants are like, you can only use cash. But I was just in Heidelberg this weekend where my daughter's studying. And there's restaurants that are like cash only too. And you just think like, bro, I just want to give you some money. Why are you making it difficult? You know?
I have no answer there, to be honest.
And the thing is, like, an EC card, nobody even accepts them. Do they even exist in Germany anymore? Like, my bank will charge me if I want to have an EC card.
I think they're being phased out in the summer.
Which means they'll be in use for 15 more years in Germany.
You know what's right? One more thing. There's a next to my co-working space in Tempelhof. There's one of those little sketchy casino places. And there's a sign on the outside that says, we take Deutschmarks.
Yeah.
Wow. I think we would definitely need to do a show there and pay with Deutschmarks. I think that's very important. Yeah.
Did you live here when there were still Deutschmarks?
Me?
No, I know you did.
Oh, you're asking me?
Yeah.
No, I'm fairly European.
Oh, okay.
So, Euro. We already faxed the playlist and we heard some great jazz. So we were talking about faxing, of course, because this is Germany. Why do you think that Germans are so behind technology or don't like technology that much?
It's weird because actually, you know, 25 years ago or so, they were ahead. Like they loved DSL lines, ISDN lines, DSL lines. They had a lot of Siemens technology company. And then I think Datenschutz, I think they took a left turn at Datenschutz, at personal privacy, and they just get distracted by it and think that if you have somebody's information, you can basically own them and control them. And so they're just afraid of technology now because you might find something out about them, and they're unique individuals.
I mean, this morning I had to sign a letter saying that, you know, like some kind of doctor is going to come to the kindergarten where my kid is and give him a checkup. But I had to sign a letter that doctor was allowed to send that information to some government health office. That's like, are they somehow hoping, like this data protection stuff, they're somehow hoping that they're going to prevent like the secret police from rounding up my children or something? I don't know. It's really weird. Like this data protection thing, it's all about like, we want to prevent the next dictatorship. Yeah, or
it
something.
It doesn't work.
No, but that's not going to work. That's not going to do
because
it.
Because the one place they're happy to give their information is registering your address. So you're handing the government all of your information. So then the rest of it doesn't, if you're worried about the government, why are you telling the government where you live? It's so illogical, the whole thing. It makes no sense, but it's just this thing of like, you know, don't take a picture of me in public. You can't know anything about me.
And your name is on your doorbell, so you're easy to find.
Or you can sit naked next to each other and see everything about your boss, but Datenschutz.
Yeah.
I still found that very interesting about don't ask me personal questions, but I don't mind sitting next to you while you're naked.
I don't know who your boss is, but the problem is I'm picturing her boss naked and I'm not liking it. I don't know what this man looks like, but.
I've never done that with my boss. Have you, what kind of boss do you have?
I mean, in general, there's like this happy hour at some companies in Germany where you can actually go to the sauna for a specific amount of time and with very low prices. And of course, you can meet there your bosses.
No, I can, like all of my comedy friends, because we don't do anything, comedians don't do anything. They all go to Vabali, this spa, this place. And basically every comedian, male, female in Berlin has seen every other comedian naked. And they don't like it. Nobody likes it. I don't go there because I don't like spa. I'm not into spas. But everybody else is like, oh my God, I know what Dave looks like naked.
Well, now they are banning people and visitors, especially tourists, to go to FKK places so that they will still be private and still be a very German thing to do and really.
Is that right? Right. Like FKK beaches?
Yes. Tourists cannot longer go to FKK beaches.
How do they know you're a tourist?
Probably they're going to be speaking English.
Because of how slowly you get naked?
Or because you want to pay with credit card?
Yeah. Because you didn't register with the fax.
So before we leave you, tell us the last or the most important part of 20% Berlin, and how can we find you and how can we enjoy more your 20% Berlin?
Yeah, online 20%.berlin. We're pretty easy to find. The most important thing is just that we, twice a week, we summarize the big news stories. So we allow people who don't speak German access to Berlin news. And we focus just on Berlin. So Maurice likes to try to go more Germany-wide, but I pull him back to just focus on Berlin. Because I think there's enough news outlets for Germany generally. But just Berlin and try to get down. Sometimes we probably get too complicated, too detailed into the politics and stuff. But I think the most important thing is just giving non-German speakers access to Berlin news.
That said, there's plenty of German people that read it too. I'm serious.
Nobody was doubting you, Maurice.
Like a friend of mine yesterday, he said, I think what you and Andrew do is basically satire. Especially Andrew, he tries to put in like a little bit of ha-ha in every little story.
Well, it's just boring to read just normal news. And it's German news, man. It's like double boring.
And German humor.
You might wonder, why do we live in this country? And there's many things that we like about Berlin. And in our podcast, we have a feature called The Bear's Knees. And it's about things that we like about Berlin. So it's not all just dissing. It's not just hot takes. We genuinely like it here. Right, Andrew?
Oh, I have two children. I'm stuck here. Yeah.
In the last Wahlheimat talks, there was Paul Spies who was talking about German angst. And he said something about a book. The title is just so great. It's called The German Burnout. If I just say that word, what would be your idea of what comes to your mind with the German burnout? Especially as, of course, Maurice is not international, but you've been living very internationally. So for someone who was not born here, what could be this German burnout?
I think look, what Germans are afraid of the most, what they fear the most, is change. They do not want any change. And it was a big enough change when the wall came down. That's a whole ton of issues there, but that was enough stress for the normal, let's say, West German, probably even the East Germans, was that was huge change. Then we talked about technology before. It's all this change. And now there's like a kind of a new geopolitics. Like, it used to be the West was strong. Asia was emerging, but hadn't emerged yet. And you knew America was okay. And like all of that is changing, changing more rapidly than we expected. And I think that's German burnout. It's just like, really what a German wants is Helmut Kohl to be Bundeskanzler. And maybe even see us still have an East German as sort of a weird magnetic pole, pulling Germany in a certain direction, but keeping it there. Just nothing. We just would like to go back to about 1986. And they're just getting overwhelmed. There's just been too many changes since then.
Right. Überfordert is like the most German word you always hear. Like, everything overwhelms people. But I think also there's something, the way people, a lot of German people process things, it's very, in a very methodical, in-depth way. And so like they feel the full impact of a lot of change, you know, and all its ramifications, and without, it lacks a little lightness sometimes, the way they digest change. And more of a half empty kind of people, glass half empty as opposed to glass half full. Wouldn't you say, Andrew?
Yeah, totally. I take a lot of trains, and when all of a sudden the track gets changed, or the Wagenreihung, the train is faced the other way around, the level of panic in people's faces. And half the time I just want to stop them and say, what do you think is going to happen if you miss this? What exactly are you so afraid of? It's just a train, man. And so the worst thing is, maybe you get on at the wrong end, or you miss the train, you have to take 1 hour. Like, I don't. Yeah, and it's just that suddenly, oh my God, the world, my tiny world for this 15 minutes is different. What do I do now?
I don't know, I forget who the politician was, but there was, or maybe it was the CDU, like the slogan for a long time was no experiments. And I feel like that's kind of ended us where we are now. Like, that's been happening for like 30 years. So now we need some experiments, I think.
But maybe coming back a little bit to what Andrew was saying is that this possibility of no change, and like, really, we have seen a lot of Germans that have like an error system when something doesn't go the way they thought they would. And this is exactly maybe the point where we internationals, migrants, can jump in, because, I mean, most of us are a little bit more flexible than Germans. And this is our opportunity to shine.
Oh, you must be new here.
No, I've been here for 14 years. And to be honest, I love being the Mexican here, because I just get and change things very often. And when, of course, yeah, well, maybe it's because I do a lot with tequila shots, and that's maybe why people like me. But I still believe that it is internationals that we can help them during these times where things are changing and they do not know really how to be that spontaneous.
Well, it's like the EC card thing at the Bürgeramt. Like, how you just want to look at all your German friends and say, how is that okay? Why are you accepting this? Why is this okay? Why are, like, and it just feel like every time you try to bring, it's like a new idea or a little bit of change, you run up against this huge wall that you just think like, yeah, well, there, yeah, we can't change it. Like, yeah, give me another shot of tequila. I can't. I don't. I would love to change it. I would love to make things more efficient. I would be totally happy to bring a little bit some things American here. Try being nice. Try just saying greeting everybody you see on the street. Like, try being North and Central American nice. Will that work?
Yeah, I mean, sometimes I'm actually very often on public transport with alone with my two very small children, and people just stare at me.
The Germans stare
without a smile. Maybe like one in 20 of them smiles, and the others just kind of give me a blank stare. I'm just, what is it? Is it because he's a guy with two children? Is it because he's tall? Is it because he's speaking English? Is it that combination? I don't know. It's really weird. Like,
maybe they are your fans and you didn't know.
Probably not by the way they look, but.
But the Germans stare. Yeah. Why are you, what? Like, why are you saying, actually, the other day I was parking a car and this guy just stared at me the whole time I was parking my car. And I finally got out and I just said, na, alles klar? And he just went, yeah.
It's the German stare. I mean, Hermann the German, or gnome that normally answers this sort of things, has had a couple of answers regarding the German stare.
So it's just kind of fun to just stare right back into their eyes and see who flinches first.
It is a game. You see this. You have to see this as an opportunity to initiate a game.
Exactly.
Before we leave you, one thing on a positive tone. I mean, Maurice is half German, or he's German, but Andrew's not. What is this like German treat that you have integrated in your life that you have come to and decide like, oh, I am that German?
I mean, I love that everything's closed on Sunday. I don't know. I love that. It's so nice. It's like a day that feels different. Like every other day feels the same. Saturday feels a little different, especially because I live in Kovitz and we have the Kovitzplatz and we have the market here. So it feels, but it still is like you're out there stressed. You could go shopping, and Sunday you wake up, you cannot go shopping. So it's just, I love it. I think it's fantastic. I think everybody should have, it's a different day. Make it Wednesday. I don't care what day of the week it is. It doesn't have to be Sunday. But just one day where everything's closed.
I guess, I mean, I've become maybe a bit of a Sparfuchs, you know, like I love a good deal, you know.
Sparfuchs.
I didn't used to be like that, but maybe, you know, because, you know, it's little kids. And the other day I had an opportunity to get like free detergent. I had to go to the shop and then I had to take a picture of the receipt and then upload it onto a website. And then 3 weeks later, I got €7.
You just spent more money.
I'm so excited.
More money of your time than you got back from the company.
Marlene, our producer, is smiling and also nodding. So Marlene, maybe you can tell us your own little German thing that you have found during this time with us internationals that you say like, yeah, I am that German.
Since we did this program, it's really been a lot of things that I noticed about myself. Oh, I do this and I do this too and I do this too. And one thing that always I remember is the Abendbrot. I think it's both of our favorite thing, and it's so German, and I never thought about it, but it's like, I know what Abendbrot is, and when I was younger, I never liked it, but now I do it, it's planned for this evening for me, so I incorporate it into my own life, and I never question it, I just do it.
It's so convenient. Like I make dinner. I've always made dinner for the kids and everything because my wife works late in her shop. It's so nice, man. You just open the fridge, take out 6 jars, put a loaf of bread and some butter on the table, and you're done. My German wife goes nuts, man. Like seriously, if I want to do something special for my wife, Abendbrot. She loves it.
I don't do it. I don't do Abendbrot.
You don't do Maurizio. What do you do?
I cook dinner. I don't know.
You see, this is what happens when you start being international.
Because he was raised in the UK, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I don't actually eat any bread.
Oh, my God. Yeah, no, I think 90% of your German self just died.
The other day, I said I had 2 Brötchen for breakfast, and I thought that was too much. And you said, I always have 2 Brötchen. So how can that be true?
No, but now I stopped doing carbs like 3 weeks ago.
Oh, for 3 weeks. All right.
Guys, thank you so much for being with me today. And of course, for everybody there, follow 20% Berlin. Thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Plus 49. Ask a German.
Do you really like Tatort? Like, really? And why? Like, it's not even remotely real. You've never seen a police... I've never seen a police department that nice. Like, I just don't... What's... Well, I don't get it.
First off, I have to admit, for younger generations like mine, Tatort may not be quite the Sunday night institution it was for our parents or grandparents, but it still holds a certain charm. It's more than just a crime show. For many, it's a weekly ritual, something familiar and dependable that airs every Sunday evening at 20:15. I think part of its appeal is how deeply rooted it is in German culture. The characters often stay the same for years, even decades, and viewers grow attached to them like old acquaintances. Each episode is set in a different city, and regional broadcasters bring their own flavor. Whether that's comedy in Münster, psychological drama in Kiel, or gritty realism in Berlin and Dortmund. You also get familiar patterns, inside jokes, and sometimes even political nods. And because the show reflects current affairs, local dialects, and social issues, it feels relevant while still being predictable enough to relax into. It's this blend of tradition, variety, and connection to real life that keeps people coming back. Even if you only watch Tatort every now and then, you're stepping into a cultural moment that millions across Germany are sharing at the exact same time.
My question for Germans would be, okay, you know, if you're driving a car and you're parking your car in Germany, why is it when you park your car, there's always like one or two old men watching you park your car to make sure you don't touch the car behind you? Because if you touch it, they're phoning the police. Just touch it. Why is that?
I think this phenomenon also falls under the infamous German stare, something that truly extends to all corners of everyday life. Whether you're parking your car, standing in line, or crossing the street 2 seconds too early, there's often at least one person watching closely. When it comes to parking though, that gaze tends to intensify. And while it might feel a little intimidating, it likely stems from a very German combination of a deep-rooted need for order and a love of rules. Germans are raised to believe that rules keep society functioning smoothly. So naturally, when someone's maneuvering into a tight spot, there is a keen interest in whether it's being done correctly. And I think to that you can also add a dash of know-it-all energy. I feel like sometimes these people are even hoping to catch someone slip up. Not necessarily to cause harm, but just to point it out. It's not always meant unkindly, but rather as a way of maintaining the social order. And let's be honest, if something does go wrong, they'll be the first to help, because they usually know what to do. Or at least they're first to tell you what you should have done differently.
And that is a wrap up for today's episode here on Plus 49. Thank you so much to Andrew and Maurice for joining us today. Thank you, Marlene, for making this possible. And thank you for spending your time with us. Whether you came in for the news, stuck around for the Spargel talk, or found unexpected joy in the fax machine debate. We'll be back next week with more stories, voices, and oddities from life in Germany. Until then, stay curious, stay warm, and maybe don't throw out that fax machine just yet. Hasta la próxima.